Part 3. You have performed well in simulation, Control said one day, more than 3 months after I had first woken up to find myself a disembodied brain. Thank you, I thought. I have been trying to live up to my end of our deal. You have been, Control said. You may find it useful to know that you have become one of our best pilots in terms of hitting training performance goals. Well, of course I was. It was because I was very careful to perform simulations exactly to spec, so the software wouldn't glitch and they would have to root about in the system to fix it. The blue pill system I made was pretty solid, but why tempt fate? The other reason was that when Control wasn't paying attention, I was watching videos and listening to music that had been in the Chandler's entertainment library, which helped to keep me sane instead of dwelling on my complete and utter isolation from the rest of humanity. It's not exactly surprising that staying sane is useful when trying to hit performance markers, none of which I expressed or even thought while Control was around. By now, I had some understanding of why Control only heard what I thought directly to it. The brain-reading software recognized intentional attempts at communication and filtered that away from the constant low-grade babbling and monologuing every brain does all the time, in order to optimize communication. The software kept the thoughts I meant to myself internal. But if you remember how many times in your life you unintentionally said something out loud you meant to keep quiet and made a mess of your life for a day because of it, then you'll know why I tried to keep my mind blank when Control was around. I'm happy to know that, I thought, and then waited, like I always did. You have done well enough that we have agreed to your request, Control said. My request? You asked if you could speak to Secretary Ocampo at some point, Control said. We have arranged for you to speak. Is he coming to visit me? I asked. In a manner of speaking, Control said. We have arranged for a feed to be ported through to this simulation. So, not on the Chandler itself. Well, that was just fine. Will that be today? I asked. No, we have work to do today. But soon. Thank you, I thought. I am grateful. And that was certainly true, as far as it went. You're welcome, Control said. Let's begin today's simulations. When will you have an actual mission for me? Why do you ask? You have been training me all this time. I've been doing well, as you said. I'm ready for missions. You want to fulfill your obligations to us, Control said. I do. In order to regain your body. I would be lying if I said that wasn't a big part of it, I thought. Which was also true as far as it went. I don't have any information for you, Control said. You will get a mission when we decide the time is right. It is not the right time yet. I understand, I thought. I am just anxious. Don't be, Control said. You will be busy soon enough. And then it opened up a simulation in which I was fighting 3 Colonial Union frigates at the same time. It was one I had done before, with some variation. The goal wasn't to destroy all the frigates. The goal was to make them expend as much of their firepower on me as possible so that when 3 other ships skipped in to attack them, they wouldn't have the defenses to survive. Basically, I was bait in the scenario. It wasn't the only scenario that I'd been bait for recently. Let's just say I wasn't loving the pattern of the simulations I was seeing. The communications window on my captain's screen, normally dead as the famous doornail, lit up. I put the feed inside of it onto the virtual bridge's largest monitor. On the feed, as advertised, was Secretary Ocampo.
Mr. Dockween, are you there?
He asked. He was looking into his PDA camera, inside what looked like a stateroom even smaller than the one he had on the Chandler. I am, I thought.
Okay, good.
Ocampo said.
I only have an audio feed for you. They didn't give me a video feed for some...
He stopped here abruptly. He had just realized that the reason he didn't have a video feed was because there wasn't a body for him to look at, just an exposed brain in a clear box. But I had a video feed. so I could see a flush rising through Ocampo's features. He had at least enough grace to be ashamed of himself for forgetting what he had gotten me into. "It's all right," I thought. "I just wanted to talk anyway, if that's all right, if you have time."
"Today is a religious observance day for the RA who run this outpost," Ocampo said. "So nothing's going on today. It's why I'm able to speak to you at all."
"Hooray for RA Christmas," I thought to Ocampo. He smiled at this.
"So, what's on your mind?"
he asked. And then I got to see another flush rise through his face as he realized just how inappropriate that particular phrase might be to me. This time, at least, he didn't try to run from it.
"Jesus, Rafe," he said. "Sorry about that."
"It's all right," I assured him.
"I'm not sure why you even wanted to speak to me," Ocampo said. "If I were in your shoes..." "Oh, fuck."
Okay, if I could laugh, I would definitely be laughing right now.
"I'm glad one of us would be,"
Ocampo said.
"My point is, I don't know why you want to speak to me. I assumed that given what has happened to you, you would never want to speak with me again, that you would be furious."
"I was furious," I admitted, which was 100% true. "I can't say I'm happy even now with the situation I'm in. You know what they did to me, to my body."
"Yes."
"Now that's nothing to be happy about. But I remember what you said to me the last time I saw you. Do you remember?"
"Not really,"
Ocampo said. He paused.
"There was a lot going on that day,"
he said. "You said that you had to ask where your loyalties were, to the Colonial Union or to humanity. You said there was a difference between the two."
"All right. Yes, I remember that now."
"I want to know what you meant by that," I thought to him. "Because while neither you nor I can change what's happened to me, maybe there's something you can tell me that makes sense of it all, so I don't think I've lost my body and my freedom for nothing." Ocampo was quiet at this for a moment, and I was content to let him take his time.
"You understand there is a lot that I can't tell you," he said finally. "That much of what I'm doing now is classified. That my colleagues could be listening in to this conversation so that it wouldn't be safe to share anything confidential with you. And that even if they weren't listening in, that I wouldn't share it anyway because that's the nature of things."
"I understand that," I thought. "Secretary Ocampo, I know what my role is. Mine is not to ask why, mine is to do or die." Ocampo blinked and then smiled.
"You're quoting Tennyson to me," he said.
"Misquoting him, more likely, but yes. What I'm saying is that I'm not asking about the tactics and strategy, sir. I'm asking about the philosophy. Surely that's something you can talk about."
"I can,"
Ocampo said, and then, jokingly,
"But how much time do you have?"
"I have all the time you want to give me," I thought, and let that just sit there between us. And then Ocampo started talking. Talking about humanity and about the Colonial Union. He gave me a brief history of the Colonial Union and about how its first encounters with intelligent alien species, all of which went badly for the Colonial Union and almost destroyed the young political system, permanently marked it as aggressive and warlike and paranoid. He talked about the decision to sequester away the planet Earth, to intentionally slow its political and technological progress in order to make it essentially a farm for colonists and soldiers, and how that gave the Colonial Union the raw human resources it needed to become a power among intelligent species far more quickly than any of the other species expected or could deal with. He explained how the Conclave, the union of hundreds of intelligent species, was formed in part because of the Colonial Union, how its leader, General Tarsem Gao, realized that more than any other species or government, the Colonial Union had a template that would eventually lead to domination of the local space, and to the genocide, intentional or otherwise, of other intelligent species. That creating the Conclave was the only solution, that the Colonial Union would either be absorbed into the Conclave as one voice among many, or counteracted because the Conclave would be too large for the Colonial Union to take on. He explained how this was a great idea in theory, But in reality, the Colonial Union had nearly destroyed the Conclave once, and only General Gao's personal decision to spare the Colonial Union kept all the species of the Conclave from falling on it like a train bearing down on a rodent on its track. He explained that once Gao was gone, the Colonial Union was a target, and all of humanity with it. And he explained, only generally, only in vague terms, how he, a few trusted allies, and a few alien races who were presumed to be enemies of humanity but were in fact merely enemies of the Colonial Union, thought there was a way to save humans as a species, even if the Colonial Union should fall. And by should, it was understood what was meant was would, and that in fact the Colonial Union wouldn't so much fall as be pushed, and in a particular direction. All of this Ocampo expounded, with himself in the role as a reluctant catalyst or fulcrum for history, someone who wished it were not necessary to give the Colonial Union that push, but one who, recognizing it was necessary, nevertheless stood up, regretfully, yes, heroically, perhaps, to administer the push in the service of the species. In short, what an asshole. Which is not what I said. Which is not what I even came close to allowing myself to think at the time. What I said and what I was thinking during all this were variations of one simple phrase, that phrase being, "Do go on." I wanted him to talk and talk and then talk some more. Not because he was the first human I had spoken to since that day on the Chandler. I didn't like him that much. Although, of course, I didn't want him to know that. I wanted him to think I was interested and curious in what he had to say and thought as well of him as I could under the circumstances. I wanted him to think I thought his thoughts were golden, pure nuggets of humble wisdom. Do go on. I wanted him to think this because while he was talking to me, he was connected to the Chandler. His PDA, more specifically, was connected to the Chandler. And while he was talking to me, I was going through and copying into the Chandler's storage every single file he had on his PDA. Because here was my problem. No matter what sort of free run I had with the Chandler system, I was trapped there. I couldn't get into the system that Control used to connect to the Chandler. Someone would notice that the Chandler was trying to address the system. They could log every request, and they would eventually figure out who was doing that, and then I would be screwed. Besides that, whatever system there was would be entirely alien. I had suspected, and Ocampo unwittingly confirmed, that wherever we were, it was someplace controlled and run by the Array. And I knew nothing about Array computing systems, or their design, or their programming languages. There was likely to be a computing shell of some sort in which human-designed operating systems could run, and some software that could port documents created on either side to the other. But full access to the system? That wasn't going to happen. I didn't have the time or resources to get up to speed if it did, and I would be found out and probably tortured and then maybe killed if I tried. Ocampo's PDA, on the other hand, I knew all about that software and hardware. Official Colonial Union PDAs were manufactured by lots of different companies, but all had to run the same software. They all had to be able to talk to every other PDA and any other computers the Colonial Union used for official business. When you have that level of standardization across a government spanning trillions of miles, every other computer, operating system, or piece of technology is either standardized to it or is able to communicate with it. Oh, I knew Ocampo's PDA, all right. Once he opened that connection to the Chandler, I knew how to access it, how to look around it, and how to extract files. And I knew how to do it without him knowing. Not that I expected him to know. He didn't exactly have the programmer look to him, if you know what I mean. He'd be the programmer's boss, the one they hated, the one who made them work on holidays. I also knew that Ocampo would have all sorts of interesting files on his PDA because, simply put, where else would he have them? That's the computing and storage unit that he left the Chandler with. He would be even less familiar with RA technology than I would be, Makes sense that he would keep it, and that he would keep his own information on it. I remembered the exchange Ocampo had with Tavan about Vera Briggs. That poor woman was kept in the dark about a lot of things. Ocampo was used to keeping his own counsel about his business. The longer I kept Ocampo talking, the more I could find out about his business. Not that I was trying to sort through any of it while he was talking to me. I had to stay attentive and keep him talking. If I gave any indication he was boring me figuratively out of my skull, then he'd drop the connection. So I kept him talking and had a program make a copy of his PDA. All of it, right down to the communication program he was using to talk to me. I could sort out all of the data later, including the encrypted files. All of which, it turned out, were keyed to the PDA. So opening them in a virtual copy of the PDA would open the files just fine. Sloppy. Hello, three cheers for sloppiness. The entire copying process took just a little under 2 hours. I kept Ocampo talking the whole time. It required very little prompting. Ever heard of monologuing? The thing where the captured hero escapes death by getting the villain to talk just long enough to break free? Well, this wasn't that, because I was still a brain in a box and likely to die the first time I was sent on a mission. But it was something close. And Ocampo had no problem talking and then talking some more. I don't think it was sheer megalomania, or if I wanted to be nice about it, him taking pity on the guy he had caused to be turned into a naked brain. I don't know how many other humans there were where we were. I only knew of Ocampo, Vera Briggs, and whoever the woman was who helped supervise re-implanting weapons systems on the Chandler. Of the other two, the weapons systems supervisor looked sort of busy whenever I saw her. As for Vera Briggs, I imagine at this point she might not be feeling especially friendly toward Ocampo. In other words, I think Ocampo just plain might have been lonely for human contact. Which I could understand. I had been lonely, too. The difference being, of course, that one of us had made the choice to be lonely. The other one of us rather unexpectedly had the choice thrust upon him. As it turns out, Ocampo's desire to monologue lasted about 15 minutes longer than the time I needed it to. I knew he was done when he said, "But I must be boring you," to me, which is narcissist speak for, "Now I'm bored." "You're not boring me," I thought at him. "But I understand how much of your time I've already taken up today. I can't really ask for more of it. Thank you, Secretary Ocampo."
"Of course," he said,
and then his face got a look. I thought it resembled what the face of someone who felt guilty about something but didn't actually want to be troubled by doing anything to deal with that guilt might look like. I waited, and eventually I think Ocampo's vestigial sense of moral obligation kicked in.
"Look, Da Queen, I know I've put you in a bad spot," he said. "I know they've promised to return your body to you, and I know they will. They've done this before. But between now and then, if there's something I can do for you, well..."
He trailed off here, letting me imply that he'd be willing to do something for me without actually saying it, which I think he thought would give him an out. Oh, this guy was a treasure, this Assistant Secretary of State Tyson Ocampo. "Thank you, sir," I thought. "I can't think of anything I need from you right now." On the monitor, I could see Ocampo visibly relax. I had just let him off the hook, which gave me the space to say what I really wanted to. "But there is one thing you can do for me in the future."
"Name it,"
Ocampo said. "Someday soon they will give me a mission. My first real mission, not the simulated ones they've been having me running. It would mean a lot to me if, on that day, you and Vera Briggs came to see me off."
"You mean there on the Chandler?"
"Yes, sir. I realize that to some extent in my condition," and that was an intentional knife thrust to the guilt centers of Ocampo's brain right there, "it wouldn't matter whether you said goodbye inside of the Chandler or outside of it, but it would mean a lot to me. You and Miss Briggs are the only people I know now. I'd like someone to see me off. Just a couple of minutes here before I go, if you would." Ocampo thought about it for a minute, which was either him figuring out the logistics or trying to see if he could get out of it.
All right, he then said. We'll do it.
You promise? I asked. Because this was the guy who just trailed off on, if there's something I can do for you.
I promise,
Ocampo said, and I believed him. Thank you, Secretary Ocampo, I said. You're a good man. Ocampo either smiled or winced at that. Either way, then he waved and cut the signal. Things I learned from Ocampo's PDA. 1. There was no doubt Ocampo had known he was going away. He stocked himself quite a library of entertainments, several thousand videos ranging from classic movies from Earth to the latest serials from Phoenix, an equal number of books and musical tracks, and a fair sampling of video games, although these were mostly a decade or more old. I guess when you're running the universe, you don't have time to keep up with everything. Oh, and mountains of porn. Look, no judgment. Like I said, it's clear he knew he was going to be away for a long time and probably without significant human companionship. I'm not going to say I wouldn't do the same thing in his shoes. I'm just saying there was more of it than any other sort of entertainment. And yes, I looked at some. I may be a brain in a box, but that saying that the biggest sex organ is the mind, in my case, both literally and figuratively true. Also, I was curious to see if lack of gonads meant lack of response. The answer? Definitely not. Which was more of a relief than you might think. Anyway, I might have just gone on about porn too long. The point was, Ocampo planned for the long term. Also in the PDA, a truly impressive amount of confidential information from the Colonial Union. To begin, all the information I think there might have been on the Colonial Union's military capabilities, not just the general Colonial Defense Forces, but also its special forces and its capabilities. Information on ships, their capabilities, and their state of readiness. Information about the manpower of the Colonial Defense Forces, its fatality rate over the years, and information about how the lack of relationship with Earth was having an impact on CDF readiness. After all, if you can't get new soldiers, every soldier you lose becomes one less soldier you can muster. Detailed files on the civilian arm of the Colonial Union government, with particular emphasis on the Department of State, which made sense considering who Ocampo was, but every aspect of the CU bureaucracy was gone over in what looked like exhausting detail. I did a lot of skimming. Information on the Colonial Union merchant fleet, the thousands of trade and cargo ships that crossed between the planets, including which ones were purpose-built and which ones were repurposed from CDF ships, and their most recent trade routes. Briefs on the current relationship between the Colonial Union and every known non-human intelligent species, as well as the Conclave as a political entity and the Earth. Briefs on every single Colonial Union planet, population, defensive capabilities, and a list of targets that would offer maximum damage either to population, to infrastructure, or to industrial capacity. Blueprints and assessments of Phoenix Station, the seat of the Colonial Union government and humanity's single largest spaceport. In other words, just about every single bit of information you would want to have in order to plan an attack on the Colonial Union and make it stick. Or at least what I thought you would need. I'm not an expert, but that's what it looked like to me. Now, not all this information was classified. Some of this information you could get just from looking at an encyclopedia or public records. Ocampo or anyone else using this information wasn't exactly going to have the ability to just access a local data network. Ocampo brought with him everything he'd need, or thought he'd need. But then there was the rest of it. The new information. The data Ocampo was given since he got here. Here, incidentally, being a military base hollowed out of an asteroid, made and run by the RA until some recent tangles with the Colonial Union and some others made them scale way, way back, and information he'd created since he'd been here, with this group, with the Equilibrium, which is what they were calling themselves anyway.
I thought it was a stupid name. But they weren't giving me a vote. And if they did, I would probably name it the League of Assholes. So I don't think they would mind not having my input. This new information included audio and video recordings of meetings and the automatic transcriptions of the same. Those were useful because they tagged who was saying what. This was useful because some of the people in the meetings were from species I'd never encountered before, a fact that was not especially impressive since most of my travel was within the colonial union, but still something to deal with. Most of the transcriptions were of meetings about unexciting things, discussions about the maintenance of the base, for one, which apparently had a mold problem that was aggravating the respiratory systems of several of the species there, to which I thought, well, good. But then I found some interesting transcripts after all. For example, one recorded only a couple of weeks into our stay at the base, which started off with Ku Tlea Do, an Array diplomat, catching Ocampo not paying attention.
"You seem distracted, Secretary Ocampo," Doe said.
The video had him down the arc of the table that dominated a tiny meeting room, which had a dozen people in it, most from different races. "I'm still getting my bearings on the station, Ambassador Doe," Ocampo said.
"You will be here for a while, Secretary," Doe said. "You will have time."
Ocampo smiled here.
"Hopefully not too much more time."
"How do you mean?"
asked Ake Bai. He was an Ire. The Ire were members of the Conclave, or so I learned when I checked the files Ocampo brought with him. Increasingly unhappy members of the Conclave.
"The time has come to discuss the endgame," Ocampo said,
to the room.
"Our endgame."
"Has it?"
"It's why I am here, Ake Bai," Ocampo said.
"Indeed," said Ake Bai. "Are you sure, Secretary Ocampo, that you're not confusing your own endgame with our endgame? I understand that you are now in exile from the Colonial Union for the duration of the campaign at the very least. That does not imply that Equilibrium must now change its schedule to accommodate your personal needs or inclinations."
Ocampo smiled again, but not exactly a nice smile.
"I understand the concern," he said, looking around the room. "I know very well that many of you have the view that humans, individually and as a species, have an outsized opinion of our importance to events, both in general and here with our particular activity. I am also aware that many of you are of the opinion that I've always been a pain in the ass."
There were noises in the room that I assumed equated to laughter.
"Let me remind you, however, that the roots of this rebellion of ours come from when we, the Colonial Union, struck out against the Conclave at Roanoke,"
Ocampo continued. He looked around the room at the assembled species.
"How many of your governments watched the Conclave form and felt helpless to do anything about it?"
He looked at Ake Bai.
"How many of your governments joined the Conclave rather than fight it?"
"The Colonial Union, humanity, were the only ones to bloody the Conclave. The only ones to show they could be bloodied. The only ones to show that General Gao's experiment with hegemony could be toppled."
"You seem to be discounting the attempted coup of Gao after Roanoke,"
Ake Bai said.
"A coup given impetus by the Colonial Union's attack on the Conclave fleet,"
Ocampo countered.
"My point, Ake Bai, is that we are here today because of what humans have done. If we have a high opinion of our importance to this cause of ours, it's because we've earned it. It's not merely ego."
"There's irony in praising the Colonial Union's actions against the Conclave when it's that very action that convinced us all that it must be destroyed along with the Conclave," said Uter Nove.
Nove was from Elpri. I had no idea until that moment that a planet named Elpri even existed.
"We all agree that the return to an equilibrium of power is best for all of our species," Ocampo said. "Thus, the very name of our organization. The Conclave represents the primary threat to that equilibrium. We agree about that. We also agree that the Colonial Union grew too powerful in opposition to the Conclave. But don't confuse the Colonial Union with humanity. He nodded to Paula Gaddis, who was the other human I'd seen, the one who supervised the installation of the weapons systems. She nodded back to him.
My colleague here represents the interests of several governments of Earth,
Ocampo said.
She will be happy to tell you all the ways those governments are not even remotely concerned about the Colonial Union's interests. In the end, the Colonial Union is not humanity. It is merely a government. When the Colonial Union falls, and it will, then the Earth might finally take up the mantle of leading the former worlds of the CU. Or those worlds might form other unions. Humanity will survive. Humanity will continue as part of the new equilibrium.
Humanity, perhaps, Ake Bai said. But I was speaking of you in particular, Secretary Ocampo. You and your own endgame, which is different from that of the equilibrium.
Ocampo smiled again, picked up his PDA from the table. The video feed got momentarily wavy, trying to stabilize the image while being lifted.
You know what this is, Ake Bai?
It's a personal data assistant, I believe,
Ake Bai said.
It is,
Ocampo said.
And it contains nearly all of the last decade of data from the Colonial Union State Department and the Colonial Defense Forces. Nearly every confidential file and report on the CU's doings and conflicts. Everything they don't want known or would want swept under the carpet. Every double cross of an ally, completed or intended. Every military action on one of its own worlds. Every assassination. Every disappearance. All of it true. All of it verifiable. All of it hugely damaging to the Colonial Union.
The data you promised us to help us plan our strategy for our next phase,
Ake Bai said.
No,
Ocampo said.
Not the next phase. The last phase.
He shook the PDA for emphasis, and the video got woozy again.
Understand that every piece of data from the Colonial Union is accurate and verifiable. It all happened. And so it will serve as cover for what I will add to it.
What will you add?
Asked Doe.
All of our operations,
Ocampo said.
Every ship we've commandeered, human and conclave, every agitation we've spearheaded on Colonial Union and conclave worlds, every attack up to and including the destruction of Earth Station, all of it altered to make it look as if it happened under the aegis of the Colonial Union and the Colonial Defense Forces. All verified by both my security hash and the security hash of my former boss, the current Secretary of State.
And how did you get that?
Asked Paula Gaddis.
The weakest part of any security and verification scheme is the people who use it,
Ocampo said.
Right then I nearly paused the video to savor the rich irony of that statement, all things considered.
And the fact they trust the people they've known for years as friends and allies,
Ocampo continued, oblivious to my scorn.
Secretary Galeano is no pushover, but she has a soft spot for loyalty. I earned her trust long ago. I've never done anything that would cause her to doubt it.
Except this, Gaddis pointed to the PDA. And everything else you've done for equilibrium.
I'm not going to suggest Galeano will ever forgive me,
Ocampo said.
She won't. I like to think that in time she'll recognize the necessity.
She won't, Gaddis said.
Ocampo shrugged.
This does not explain why this would be the last phase,
Ake Bai said, bringing the discussion back around.
It just makes the Colonial Union culpable for our actions.
No, Gaddis said, before Ocampo could speak.
The Earth already believes the Colonial Union made the attack on Earth Station to cripple us and to keep us dependent. Getting confirmation would mean a state of war between us.
Which would force the hand of the Conclave,
Ocampo said.
Right, Gaddis said. Right now it's playing nice with Earth, but still keeping us at arm's length because it doesn't want to antagonize the Colonial Union. but if the CU's verifiably responsible for the destruction of Earth Station, as shown by its own documents, it all falls by the wayside. The Conclave will invite the Earth to join, which will antagonize those of us who don't want the humans in the Conclave, said Uter Nove. No offense, he said to Gaddis. None taken, she said. And that's what we want, anyway. The division will weaken the Conclave, just as the Colonial Union decides that it's a material threat and moves to destroy it. A move which would fail, Nove said. Ocampo shook his head.
The Colonial Union will fail if it goes toe-to-toe with the Conclave, yes, he said. But it wouldn't do that. It didn't do it when it destroyed the Conclave fleet at Roanoke. It didn't send its ships into combat with the Conclaves. It sent assassins, special forces, to sneak up and place anti-matter bombs on each ship and then detonate them all at the same time. It was a psychological blow as much as a physical loss. That's how the CU did it. That's how it would do it again. One assassin, one shot, total destruction. Which is how it will happen this time.
You plan to assassinate General Gao? Nove exclaimed, following Ocampo's implication.
No,
Ocampo said, and pointed to Nove.
You are going to plan it.
He pointed at Akebai.
Or you are going to plan it. You two are both in rather better positions to make it happen. Whoever does it is not my particular concern. The point is, whichever of you plans it, it will become obvious that you did it at the behest of the Colonial Union. The CU knows that humiliating Gao nearly brought the end of the Colonial Union. It knows that Gao requires loyalty to him, not the Colonial Union. Killing him destroys that loyalty. Killing him destroys the Conclave.
Which leaves the Colonial Union the largest power standing,
Ake Bai said.
No,
Gaddi said. Not without the Earth. No soldiers, no colonists.
Unless the Earth changes its mind, said Ku Tleadu.
At the right time, we will motivate them otherwise,
Ocampo said.
We've done it before. We can be equally persuasive this time.
He motioned away from the room toward, I guessed, the docks in which the Chandler was being worked on and equipped.
Unless you've got a better use for all the ships we've been taking.
A thing which is getting harder to do,
Du said.
We can't trick all the ship's captains as you did with the Chandlers.
All the more reason to bring things to an active conclusion,
Ocampo said.
We've always been a small but potent unit. Small isn't the problem. The potency of our actions is the key.
And all this begins by releasing the information on that,
Ake Bai said, pointing to the PDA.
Yes,
Ocampo said.
And where do you suggest we release it?
We release it everywhere,
Ocampo said.
Everywhere, all at once.
I think this is a good plan, Gaddis said. I even think we have a chance of making it work as we intend to.
It's nice the two humans are in agreement,
Nove said. I noted that sarcasm was a near universal trait of intelligent species. With respect, Ambassador Nove, our agreement is a good thing, Gaddis said. Don't forget that through all of this, it's my planet that is the most vulnerable. We lack spaceships. We lack military power. The governments I represent believe equilibrium offers us the best chance to build up our defenses before everyone else turns their attention to us again. This plan can make that happen.
Nove shifted its weight.
Unhappy. Gaddis turned her attention back to Ocampo. Which isn't to say it doesn't have risks, principal among them being that the Colonial Union has to believe you are dead and died loyal. If they think you're alive and a traitor, you know they won't stop looking for you.
Ocampo nodded.
The Colonial Union knows what it means when a ship is taken, he said. They know everyone but the pilot is killed. They won't think it will be any different for me.
You are an undersecretary of the State Department, Nove pointed out.
On vacation,
Ocampo said.
Nothing to identify me as anything other than an unlucky civilian.
You don't think they will suspect you? Gatti said.
I've been a part of this for several years now, Ocampo said. I've been funneling information to Equilibrium all this time. If they were going to catch me, they would have done it before I left.
You had people you used, Du said.
I had a small number of people who operated independently and subcontracted, Ocampo said. I cleaned up before I left.
You mean you had them killed, Du said.
The ones who could bring things back to me, yes.
And that won't look suspicious at all, Gaddis said, archly.
Give me a little credit for subtlety, Ocampo said.
All this talk, Ake Bai said. All this planning, all this strategizing. And yet we still don't know your endgame, Secretary Ocampo.
It's the same as the endgame for Equilibrium, he said. The end of the Conclave. The end of the Colonial Union. The end to superpowers in our little corner of space. And when it's all said and done, our group, which acts in the shadows, fades into them forever, and we go back to our worlds.
Yes, but you're dead,
Ake Bai said.
Or at least the Colonial Union thinks so. And it is in your and our interest for them to continue to believe so.
For now, Ocampo said.
And later?
Ake Bai asked.
Later, things will be very different, Ocampo said.
You don't think this will be a problem?
I don't.
And you're sure about this?
Nothing is ever certain, Ocampo said. But to go back to earlier points in this conversation, after what I've done for this group of ours and for our goals, I think I've earned some confidence for my opinions. And my opinion is no. When all is said and done, this won't be a problem at all.
And then they started talking about the mold problem some more. I came away from this with two thoughts. One, and again, Ocampo was a real piece of work. Two, that sob story he told me about humanity and the Colonial Union was a load of crap. I'll scratch that. Not entirely a load of crap. What he told me was the nice version. The version where he was a selfless martyr for humanity rather than the guy who was planting a bomb in order to profit from the chaos. I had no love for that Ake Bai character, but he, or she, or it, was not wrong. Whatever Ocampo was up to, he was in it for himself as much as, if not more so, than he was for anyone or anything else. And then there was the third thought. Ocampo's megalomania, or whatever it was, had already gotten thousands of people killed. Not only his megalomania, he wasn't working alone, but he sure seemed to be doing some of the heavy lifting. And soon, they would want to use me to do more of it. And then, like that, it was time.
We are giving you a mission,
Control said one morning, or at least during the time of day that I've been thinking of as morning since I got to the Equilibrium base. Okay, I thought to Control. That's good news. What's the mission?
We will provide you with a mission brief once you're near the skip point.
So 2 or 3 days from now, I thought.
Sooner than that, Control said. More along the line of 8 of your hours.
That was an interesting admission. Skip drives, which are how we travel immense distances in space, only engage when space-time is flat enough, that is to say, far away from a gravity well. By telling me the rough amount of time it would take to get to skip distance, Control was telling me something about where we were, that the base was someplace that had a low mass, not especially close to anything more massive, like a planet or moon. Basically, Control was telling me we were at an asteroid, at a far distance from its star.
which I knew, but which Control didn't know I knew. Control never told me. By telling me now, either Control slipped or didn't think it mattered. Since I knew Control had done this before many times, it didn't seem likely it was a slip. So Control figured it didn't matter. And I figured it didn't matter because either they thought I was well-conditioned to respond like they told me, or they didn't plan on me surviving the mission. I thought about my armaments. A couple of dozen missiles and beefed-up beam systems, perfect for blinding communication systems and incoming missiles. And then I thought about my defensive systems, which hadn't been substantially upgraded from when the Chandler was a trade ship. So, yeah, I was betting on the not-coming-back scenario. All right, I thought. It would at least be helpful to know the general sort of mission it is, however, so I might practice some simulations on the way.
That won't be necessary, Control said. We prefer you to stay focused on the mission once it starts.
Understood, I said. Does this mean I'll have control of the ship to skip distance?
No, Control said. We will control the Chandler for the disembarkation and for a short portion of time thereafter, after which a course will be set. You will have full control after the skip. Until then, you are to monitor systems. We will keep a communication channel open so you may alert us if there are any problems.
The further I get from you, the longer the lag will be in our communication, I pointed out. The speed of light still applies.
We don't anticipate any problems, Control said.
You're the boss, I thought. When do we start?
Secretary Ocampo has asked us to delay the start of your mission until he can say goodbye to you, Control said, as was your request.
Yes.
As a courtesy to him, we will allow this. He is currently otherwise engaged. When he's done, he will travel to you. You will have 10 of your minutes to say your farewells. This will happen within the next 2 hours.
Understood. Thank you, Control. It means a lot to me.
Control didn't say anything to this. I could see that it had broken its connection. That was fine. I had a couple of hours to prepare for my mission. I prepared.
I remember the last time I was here, Ocampo said.
He was standing on the bridge of the Chandler. With him were Vera Briggs and an escort of 2 Array soldiers.
I imagine it looks a little different now, I thought to him. A bit emptier?
Ocampo visibly winced at this. I could see it happen through one of the bridge cameras. Vera Briggs was silent and staring in a horrified fashion at the box containing my brain. The Array, for their part, were unreadable to me.
That's the thing about aliens, I suppose.
Thank you for coming to see me, I thought, to both Ocampo and Briggs. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Ocampo said. To be honest, it's nice to be off that rock.
One of the Array made a throat-clearing sound here, suggesting some nonverbal cues were universal. That is, if you have a throat.
It's nice to have a change of scenery, I should say.
Ocampo fairly glared at the Array. I don't want to take up too much of your time, I thought.
I know the two of you are busy. Also, Control told me that I had 10 minutes with you.
Right,
Ocampo said.
And in fact, we should probably start on our way back. They were annoyed with us enough when I insisted we say goodbye.
I understand, I replied. And I think I need to get started anyway.
From outside the bridge came a loud clanging noise, followed by what sounded like voices. It might have been the Chandler's intercom speakers acting up, or it could have been something else. Both Ocampo and Briggs jumped. The 2 Array said something to each other in their own language and hoisted their weapons. One of them held a hand out to Ocampo and Briggs, signaling that they were to stay on the bridge. The Array then exited the bridge to investigate. The automatic, reinforced door to the bridge slammed shut, sealing Ocampo and Briggs in and the Array out.
What the hell?
Ocampo asked. There was a low, thrumming sound as the Chandler's engines ramped up from their resting phase to propulsion phase.
What are you doing?
Ocampo asked me.
I'm not doing anything, I replied. I don't have control over the ship yet.
There was a banging on the bridge door.
The RA were trying to get back in.
Open the door,
Ocampo said to me. I don't have control of the door.
Who does?
Whoever it is that has been running my simulations. I don't know who they are. They just told me to call them control. Ocampo swore and pulled out his PDA. Then he swore again when he couldn't open up a line back to base. When the PDA got to the Chandler, it automatically connected to the ship's network. The Chandler's network gave every appearance of being down. Ocampo looked around at the bridge stations.
Which of these is for communications?
None of them are, right now, I thought at him. The bridge stations are cut out of the command loop. Everything gets routed through a simulated bridge which I'm supposed to control.
So you are in control of this ship?
No, I said supposed to, I pointed out. I'm not in control of the ship yet. I only get control once the ship is skipped. It's Control who is behind this.
Then talk to Control,
Ocampo yelled. I can't. I've never been given the ability to contact them. I have to wait for them to contact me. And lo and behold, guess who suddenly came onto the line?
The Chandler is moving, Control said.
Explain how.
I don't know, I thought. You're the one in control of this ship. You tell me.
I'm not in control of this ship.
Well, someone is.
It has to be you.
How can that be? I exclaimed. Check it yourself. I'm not doing a damn thing in the simulation. There was a brief pause here as Control ascertained that, indeed, inside the simulation, I was doing nothing. While this was happening, the banging at the bridge door became more insistent, and it sounded like fists were being replaced by weapon butts. Then Control's voice came over the bridge speakers.
Secretary Ocampo, it said.
Yes?
You are controlling the Chandler in some way.
The hell I am,
Ocampo said. You've sequestered yourself in the bridge, Control said.
We're locked in here, you asshole,
Ocampo said.
And I can't help but notice that my array escort is on the other side of the door. What are you up to?
Please cease your actions.
I'm not doing a goddamn thing,
Ocampo yelled. He motioned to the bridge stations.
These fucking things don't work. It's you who is doing this.
There was a pause. Ocampo looked confused. It took him maybe a second or two longer to realize that the hammering on the door had stopped while he was yelling at Control.
You have purged all the air everywhere but the bridge, Control said after a minute. You have just killed two Array.
Jesus Christ!
Ocampo said, clearly exasperated.
It's not me! I'm not in control of this ship. You are. You are the one who is doing this. You're the murderer, not me. Why are you doing this?
Enough,
Control said. By this time, I could see on my simulated sensors that the Chandler had completed its disembarkation process and was beginning to accelerate away from Equilibrium Base. This would be the point where Control would have no choice but to cut its losses and try to either disable or destroy the Chandler. I was curious to find out what would happen next. What happened next was that a ping hit my personal set of sensors. It was a signal that was meant for the bomb, nestled next to my brain in my box. It was supposed to detonate the bomb, killing me. What it did instead was launch a dozen missiles from the Chandler. Let's just say I had a philosophical disagreement with the whole blow-up-my-brain strategy, and this was my editorial comment on that plan. I think I actually heard a squawk of surprise from Control as those dozen missiles popped up on its sensors. There were three ships, aside from the Chandler, docked at Equilibrium Station. One, a refurbished Colonial Union frigate like the Chandler. One that looked like a purpose-built trade ship to me, and one of a design I didn't recognize, so probably an alien ship. I imagined that all three of them were like the Chandler, currently being repurposed for whatever asshole plan Equilibrium had up its sleeve for each of them. I tasked a missile to each ship. If those ships had crews on station, it's possible that they could have stopped the missiles, but if all they had were brains and boxes, not given control of their own ships, then they were sitting ducks. Each of those missiles hit home, crippling but not entirely destroying the ships. Intentional on my part.
If there were other brains and boxes in those ships, they didn't deserve to die at my hand. They didn't deserve any of the horror that happened to them. 6 missiles aimed for Equilibrium Base's weapon arrays, because I didn't want them to have a chance to mess up my getaway with a well-placed missile, or 2 or 10. 1 missile homed in on the Equilibrium Base energy generator, because I figured if they were worried about things getting dark and cold, they would have less time to worry about little old me or the Chandler. 1 missile went to the base communication array, to make it more difficult to get the word out. They'd undoubtedly try to launch some skip drones, but I'd already configured my beam weapons to burn those out before they got anywhere close to skip distance. Factoring in tracking lag from the speed of light would be tricky, but I'd had time to practice. That left 1 missile. That one went to my best guess as to where control was. Because, fuck that guy. Yes, you could say that I'd been busy, using the Chandler's outside cameras to scope out the base and double-checking the information with the data I had taken from Ocampo's PDA. I knew I was going to have 1 chance to get it right. Any misses and everything suddenly became a lot more complicated. Fortunately, I still had a couple of dozen missiles left. But as it turns out, I didn't need them. When I launched the missiles, I was still really close in to Equilibrium Base. The targets had anywhere from 10 to 25 seconds to respond, which might have been enough in a battle situation. But as a surprise, when the base and ships were unprepared for attack and the only person who could have raised the alarm was being kept busy with an argument with a very confused and increasingly hostile Secretary Ocampo? Nope. Not enough time. Every missile hit its mark. The resulting chaos was glorious to me. Glorious!
Hello?
Ocampo said, and I realized that from his point of view, nothing had happened. He was still waiting for a response from Control. I'm sorry, Secretary Ocampo, I thought at him. Control isn't likely to respond to you at this point.
Why not?
Because I just stuffed a missile down its fucking gullet, that's why.
What?
I just attacked Equilibrium's base, I thought at him. 12 missiles, all in the right places. It's going to keep them busy while the 3 of us get to skip distance.
What?
Ocampo said again. He clearly wasn't getting it.
You mean we're going back?
Vera Briggs said.
Back home? Back to the Colonial Union?
It was, honestly, the first time I remember her speaking a complete sentence. Yes, I said. That's the plan. Back to Phoenix Station, where I think they will be very interested in what Secretary Ocampo has to say for himself.
You can't do that,
Ocampo said. Take you back to the Colonial Union? I asked. Yes, I can. Yes, I will. In fact, that's what I was waiting to do.
I don't understand,
Ocampo said. I've had control of the Chandler for weeks. I could have tried for an escape long before now, but I needed your data to take back, and I needed you to back it up. You're going home, Secretary Ocampo.
You don't understand what you're doing,
Ocampo said. Sure I do.
No, you don't,
Ocampo said.
Don't you understand that what we're doing here is saving humanity?
Everything after that point was cut short by the woofing sound Ocampo made as Vera Briggs walked the couple of feet separating the two of them and kneed her boss square and hard in the balls. I don't even have balls anymore, and I felt that. Ocampo collapsed, groaning. Briggs kicked him several more times in the ribs and face, inexpertly but enthusiastically, until he stopped doing anything but lying there in a ball.
Motherfucker! Briggs said,
finally backing away. You didn't kill him, did you? I asked.
Trust me. I'm going to make sure he lives, Briggs said.
She spat on him. He didn't even flinch.
Make me look like a fool by perpetrating treason behind my back? For years? Kill a ship full of people and give me the choice of death or being kidnapped? Make me an accomplice to killing even more people? No, Mr. Duckqueen. This asshole lives, and I'm going to make sure the Colonial Union knows everything I know, too. So you just get us back. You get us back. I promise you, I'm going to take care of the rest of it.
And you,
Briggs said to Ocampo.
You so much as move an inch between now and then, and you're gonna wish I kicked you to death. You understand me, sir?
Ocampo didn't move a muscle for the entire rest of the trip.
Let's talk about the future,
Harry Wilson said to me. It had been a busy week. I had skipped the Chandler into existence roughly 10 clicks from Phoenix Station itself, setting off every single proximity warning the station had, which was the point. I didn't want them to miss me. As soon as I skipped, I started broadcasting that I had Secretary Ocampo and critical information about an alien attack, which got everyone's attention. Less than an hour after that, the Chandler was swarming with Colonial Defense Forces. Ocampo and Briggs were taken off the ship, Ocampo to the infirmary of Phoenix Station's detention facility, and Briggs to high-level debriefing. And then the CDF tried to figure out what to do with me. That's when Wilson showed up. Why you? I asked him. Asked him because he connected directly to me with his brain pal, the computer inside his head.
Because I've done this before, he said.
He explained that later, during his debriefing of me, during which I told him of my experiences and gave him all the information I had. The future, I said, back in the present.
Yes,
Wilson said.
What I want for the future is to have a body.
You're going to get that, Wilson said. We're already working on it. The Colonial Defense Forces have already authorized growing a clone for you.
You're going to put my brain in a clone?
Not exactly,
Wilson said.
When the clone is grown, we're going to transfer your consciousness into it. You'll leave this brain behind and be put into a new one.
Huh. That's unsettling, I said. My brain was the only part of me left. Now they were telling me that I was going to leave it behind.
I know,
Wilson said.
If it helps, I've been through the process. You're still you after it happens. Promise.
When can we start? I asked.
Well, that's up to you, Wilson said. That's what I want to talk to you about.
What do you mean?
They've already started working on your body, Wilson said. If you wanted it, and no one would say anything against you wanting it, we can get you one in a few weeks. But for someone with an already existing consciousness that we need to port into the new brain, it's not optimal. They'd rather build your body slowly and pre-prime the new brain to accept your consciousness. That way the transfer goes off without a hitch.
How long will that take?
Less time than making a body the natural way, but still a few months, Wilson said. Honestly, the longer we take prepping the body for consciousness, the better it will be.
And in the meantime, I'm stuck here on the Chandler.
Stuck is a relative term, Wilson said.
What does that mean?
It means that if you want, I might have a job for you. And the Chandler.
What's the job?
The job is to be you. Both you, Rafe Duckween, and you, the brain running the Chandler. We want the various species we talk with to be aware that you're real and that your story is real.
I already gave you all the information I have on equilibrium, I said.
It's pretty convincing. We don't need to be convinced, Wilson said. We know you're telling the truth, but you understand that us knowing about equilibrium, us knowing that they were the ones behind the attack on Earth Station and the ones who have been setting the Conclave and the CU against each other, isn't enough. Thanks to what Equilibrium has already done, the CU has almost no credibility with anyone. Not with independent species, not with the Conclave or any species within it, and certainly not with Earth.
And having me around changes that?
Well, no, Wilson admitted. I would have smiled at this if I could. It doesn't change it, but it does get our foot in the door. It offers others at least the possibility that we might be telling the truth. You can get us a hearing, at least.
What about the Equilibrium base? I asked. You sent ships there?
I'm not supposed to tell you anything about that, Wilson said.
Are you kidding me?
Relax. You didn't let me finish. I'm not supposed to tell you anything about that. Specifically, I'm not supposed to tell you that we found the base and we found a lot of fresh damage that corresponds to what you told me. But aside from that, the base was deserted.
What do you mean, deserted? I said. When did you get there?
We sent probes almost as soon as we got coordinates from you and a couple of warships right after that.
Then you should have found something. They couldn't have disappeared.
I didn't say disappeared, Wilson said. I said deserted. There was a lot of evidence of someone having been there and of the base having been used up until very recently, but whoever was there was gone. They left in a big damn hurry.
What about the other ships? I asked. The ones like me, I mean.
We found wreckage, Wilson said. Whether they were the ships like you or some other ships, we can't tell you yet.
They wouldn't have been able to go anywhere, I said. If you found wreckage, it was those ships.
I'm sorry, Rafe.
I don't understand how they could have deserted the base that quickly. I knocked out their communications.
There's the possibility that they had drones or ships in other systems set to investigate if there was no communication with the base, Wilson said. These assholes were building a fleet with hostage pilots. They probably figured one of them might try an attack or lead someone back to them sooner or later.
But I got away. If they planned for it, how did that happen?
Wilson grinned. Maybe you were better at it than they expected. They had to decide between evacuating their people or going after you.
But we still have all the evidence. You have Ocampo, for God's sake. Have him talk.
He's not going to be talking to anyone other than CDF intelligence for a while, Wilson said. More to the point, he doesn't really have the capability to talk to anyone else at the moment.
What does that mean?
It means that right now you and he have a lot in common, Wilson said.
It took me a second to figure out what that meant.
Then I imagined Ocampo in his own little box.
I don't know how I feel about that, I said eventually.
I think you should probably feel disgusted by it. But that's just me, Wilson said. I wasn't in charge of that decision. Look, Rafe, you're right. We have all the facts. We have names, we have data, and when and if people choose to look at all that rationally, then they'll realize that the Colonial Union isn't to blame for a lot of the crap it's currently getting the blame for. But until that time, being able to have you around to appeal to their emotions and sense of morality doesn't hurt. We could use you
to evoke pity.
Yes, Wilson said, among other things. Also, we kind of need a ship.
I thought about this.
For how long? I asked.
Hopefully not too long, Wilson said.
Things are moving fast now. We're already a week behind. We've sent back-channel messages to the Conclave and are arranging meetings now. We're trying the same with Earth. In both cases, things are complicated by the fact that some of their people are involved, too. And meanwhile, Equilibrium is still out there, and you've probably accelerated their schedule. Everything's going to get done very soon, I expect.
And if it all works out, then my body is waiting for me.
Even if it doesn't work out, your body will be waiting for you, Wilson said.
Although in that case, you may have less time to enjoy it than you'd want.
Let me think about it, I said.
Of course, Wilson said.
If you can give me an answer in a couple of days, that would be good.
I will.
Also, if you say yes, then we'll be working together, Wilson said. You and me and Hart Schmidt, who is worried about you and quietly furious that he's not allowed to talk to you yet and that I can't tell him anything. Well, let me suggest that you let him in to see you as soon as that's cleared from above.
I will, I said again.
You also need to tell us whether you want us to tell your parents about you yet,
Wilson said gently.
This was something I had been waffling about. I was alive, but I didn't think my family would be comforted by how I was right now.
They still think I was lost with the rest of the crew? I asked.
Yes, Wilson said. We found life pods and are retrieving the bodies and notifying the families. There was one life pod that was destroyed, as you know. We can always say to your parents that some bodies haven't been found, which happens to be true as far as it goes.
I'll tell you what to do when I give you my other answer, I said.
Fair enough.
Wilson stood up.
One last thing. The State Department asked me to ask you if you'd do a write-up of your experience, a personal history.
You've already debriefed me.
I did. Wilson agreed. I got all the facts. I think they're wanting to know everything else, too. You're not the only person they've done this to, Rafe. I know that for a fact. At the end of this, we're going to have to put other people back together, too. Your telling us what it's been like for you might help with that.
I'm not a writer, I said.
You don't need to be, Wilson said. We'll get someone to clean it up so it scans. Just talk the whole thing through. We'll figure it out from there.
Okay, I said. And that's what I did. And that's what this is. The life of the mind. Well, my mind anyway. So far.